BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Sophie Colombo, a new generation thinker. That's a scheme run jointly by the Arts and Humanities Research Council and by the BBC to help share some of the new research going on in our universities with a wider audience. So that's what we'll bring you after this short message.
Hello, I'm Jess Gillam. I play the saxophone and I really think you should subscribe to my new podcast, This Classical Life. If you're like me and always listening to music, this is a great new way of discovering sounds for your playlists.
It's when I want something really groovy and really funky.
Every week I'm joined by a special guest and we share the latest tracks we just can't stop playing.
I also have this playlist on my phone called 5am and it's full of classical music.
Just head to BBC Sounds and subscribe to This Classical Life.
Welcome to New Generation Thinkers, To Be a Man, a series of the essay recorded for BBC Radio 3 before an audience at the York Festival of Ideas 2019. Tom Smith of the University of St Andrews researches gender and sexuality in German culture. But Tom is a son of North Yorkshire, so this is a proper homecoming for him. His new book, which comes out next year, is the source of today's talk. With a story of comrades in arms, please welcome Tom Smith.
In spring 1988, at the militarised border between East and West Germany, things were getting pretty difficult for the East German border guards. The economy was in free fall, Gorbachev was withdrawing Soviet support, and numbers of East Germans escaping to the West were rising. Life on base was brutal and isolating. Soldiers never knew when they'd be ordered to shoot, including at unarmed escaping civilians. The Berlin Wall would fall in just 18 months, but here, no one could have predicted it. In the late 1980s, even soldiers who were totally dedicated to socialism were feeling the pressure. In this climate of wavering morale, the East German Security Service, the infamous Stasi, was investigating soldiers at the country's remote southern border. This in itself wasn't unusual. The Stasi and the army worked together closely. So-called liaison officers were active at all levels of the military. In the late 1980s, 1 in 12 military personnel worked for the Stasi, compared with a mere 1 in 60 or so in the population at large. What's unusual is what they were investigating. Unmarried officers, aged 28 or over. Fast forward 30 years, I stumbled upon the report from this investigation in the Stasi files. It shows that military commanders were trying to understand these men and why on earth they weren't married. Their hobbies and interests weren't different from married officers. They seemed politically sound, so why were they still bachelors? The report suggests some answers. Habituated to bachelor lifestyle, no interest in the female sex. 4 officers. Actual or presumed lack of opportunities for contact with women. 2 officers. The list goes on. The dossier delves into men's personal lives and tries to understand why they deviated from the army's image of a military man. In some cases, it doesn't hold back. Unattractive to women. 2 officers. I've read a lot of files from the East German regime, and many investigations seem bizarre and downright sinister, but I couldn't help asking why these unmarried men became targets. The answer was further down the page. The process of investigating revealed no sexually abnormal behaviours, including signs of homosexuality. There's even an attachment. Guidelines on working with homosexual army members in career positions. Army command was clearly worried about homosexuality in the ranks. The dossier doesn't explain why, but the guidelines claim gay or bisexual soldiers are bad for unit cohesion and vulnerable to being blackmailed by Western spies. But what's fascinating is they aren't investigating 1 or 2 soldiers who they suspect might be gay. They're targeting every unmarried officer just in case. Apparently, it didn't take much to flout the army's norms of masculinity. being single was enough. The report shows the military working hard to understand disruptive forms of masculinity. Queerness, especially, is important here. The army isn't just trying to suppress or ignore it. Queerness drives policy and expensive investigations. When I say queerness, I'm using it in a political sense. Queer was a hateful insult used to attack gays and lesbians, like sissy, only stronger. In the 90s, though, activists adopted the word as they tried to rethink sexuality. They insisted that for lots of people, categories like gay and straight, masculine and feminine, weren't just inaccurate, they were harmful. Queer bypassed those categories and refused to accept society's insults. I use queer because the word homosexuality has a difficult history. It's long been the language of medical examinations and legal sentences for queer men and women. In East Germany, it was the language of the state and the Stasi. East Germany legalised homosexuality in 1968, only a year after England and Wales, but decriminalisation didn't lead to a flourishing rights movement. Queer organisations had to stay underground, and queer people struggled to gain visibility or acceptance. Nowhere more so than in the army. Career soldiers could still be dismissed for homosexuality until 1988. For comparison, it was 2000 in the UK, 2011 in the US. But most East German soldiers were conscripts. Since there was no law exempting gay men from military service, commanders couldn't dismiss them, only humiliate and punish them, and raise their suspicions with the Stasi. And they did. I've read files on over 150 soldiers, and the full number is probably hundreds more at least. In just one division in the late 70s, 46 people were being investigated for homosexuality. The files tell a story of rumour and gossip, loneliness and mistrust. Another reason for using queer is respect. The words we use are important. We can't know how people in the past understood their sexuality, so it's our responsibility not to force words like homosexual onto them. The military was desperate to label soldiers. I found countless conclusions like this. Homosexual orientation and activity could not be conclusively proven. Recommend closing investigation, but continuing targeted research and monitoring the subject. This situation's just heartbreaking. This young man has no way out. Queer or not, mere suspicion is reason enough for further inquiries. As a queer person myself, I found these documents upsetting. I can't bring myself to share them. It feels invasive, and these men deserve their privacy. The army's Stasi officers hounded queer soldiers. Investigators forced queer men to describe sexual experiences in graphic detail. They recruited their friends, lovers, and families. For one soldier, every man he'd ever been with had been working for the Stasi, except one, and he was a CIA agent. Some of these men were queer. Others may have sought intimacy or sex with fellow soldiers without identifying as gay or bisexual. Maybe because they were isolated, but mostly just because sexuality is messy and complicated. Still others may never have been queer, just too effeminate, too artsy, or too unmarried. These files show us something we often overlook. Military institutions depend on queer masculinities. They don't just suppress or punish queer people. There's a fascination with uncovering, understanding, and often controlling them. And organisations do adapt, slowly and reluctantly, because of the strength and activism of queer members. When we put queer experiences at the centre of research into masculinity, we learn a lot about institutions and societies. In East Germany, we even see how some queer soldiers found intimacy, sex, and relationships. I've been working with autobiographies to let queer ex-soldiers tell their own stories. Jens Biski doesn't need my help. He's a formidable figure on the German cultural scene today. He edits the arts section of a major German broadsheet, the Süddeutsche Zeitung, and he's the kind of person who can make or break a new novel or exhibition. He's written a memoir, Born on the 13th of August, about growing up gay in East Germany and his 4 years as an officer. The army lifestyle was a shock for Biski. He really believed in his duty to defend East Germany, but wasn't prepared for the tough reality. He'd already discovered East Berlin's queer scene after he finished school, and his sexuality would make his military service even more difficult. Early on, Biski faced an army medical examination. He'd been caught cruising. The doctors concluded that his psychological state was normal, but noted a sexual drive and emotional orientation towards homosexuality. From the get-go, Biski's army career and his queerness were potentially at odds with one another. But in fact, Biski says, he actually found freedom in the army to explore his sexuality. Freedom, he writes, was easiest to obtain if I subjected my life to the strictest of discipline. Paradoxically, by going beyond the call of duty, being the best soldier he could be, Biski avoided scrutiny and could spend his free time living and travelling with his partner, Wolfram. As his army career drew to an end, he even came out to his platoon. I just told them about Wolfram and took them back to base. Biski explored his sexuality alongside his military career by flying under the radar. But another young man found intimacy in the army even though he stuck out in every way. Stefan Wolter, now a historian, was a conscientious objector, sent to work in the army's labour units in Prora on the Baltic Sea. Prora is a haunting place. It's a 4-kilometre-long building complex along the coast, started as a Nazi holiday camp that was never finished. The East German army used the complex to house its labour units for conscientious objectors. Today, these colossal buildings cast an imposing shadow over one of Germany's finest beaches, as army museums jostle for business with ice cream sellers. When Wolter was there, this exposed coast must have seemed bleak and far from home. Labour units were gruelling, days were long, and work was hard. To make it worse, Wolter was mocked by his comrades. They called him a prince and accused him of airs and graces, made fun of his penchant for personalising his uniform by popping his collar up. And they resented the fact that the company doctor exempted him from manual work because of his chronic pain. Wolter had a relationship with another conscientious objector, Thomas. They stole moments of intimacy in barracks and met secretly in the woods and sand dunes. Wolter remembers when their hands first met, when he first felt Thomas kiss him. His writing is candid and confident, a kind of collage of letters, photographs, and vivid memories. He even reclaims the mocking nickname Prince in his title, the Prince of Prora. Above all, Wolter writes that his relationship made his time bearable, and it certainly inspired creativity in his work. Biski and Wolter show that queerness was at the centre of the East German military. The army certainly didn't accept queerness, but wholesale persecution and repression isn't the whole picture either. In response to military service, queer soldiers shaped their own lives and the institution in small but significant ways. When we listen to queer voices, we start to see male-dominated institutions in a different light. The military isn't a monolithic group of hard, straight men with a few unfortunate queer outliers. Militaries everywhere have been preoccupied with queerness. Think of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the US. But when we look closer, we don't just see repression, don't tell, and ignorance, don't ask. Everyone's masculinity in these institutions is different. Different strengths and weaknesses, different relationships and priorities, different responses to rules and discipline. Military masculinity isn't a general concept promoted from above. It's created from below by individuals fighting to fit in or stick out in many ways and for all kinds of reasons.
Thanks for downloading us. This series of five talks on masculinity includes a history of the three-piece suit, shaving in Georgian fashion, redcoats and the rise of the military memoir, and a tuneful salute to the Glasgow hard man. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, you can find more on the Radio 3 SA website or look out for other BBC Arts and Ideas discussions and explorations of new academic research from the Free Thinking programme, where our playlists include The Way We Live Now, The Getting of Knowledge, and Free Thinking, The Future.